Good morning. This meeting of the House Education Committee will come to order at 9:14 a.m. on Wednesday, February 8th. We are having some technical difficulties with our projection materials, so be patient. Members of House Education present are Vice Chair Representative Justin Parrish, Representative Jennifer Johnson, Representative Chuck Kopp, Representative Dave Tallarico, Representative Zach Fansler, and myself, Representative Harriet Drummond. Please note, Representative Sponholz has been excused from this committee meeting today. We have a quorum to conduct business. Before I begin, I'd like to remind everyone to silence their cell phones. Our record secretary today is Kelly Burnett and Alex Bibi Judice from the LIO here to help with our teleconferencing. Thank you both. Today we'll be talking more about broadband. We've heard from a lot of different school districts this week about how they're utilizing virtual learning and new technologies. But I think it will be helpful for all of us to learn more about the accessibility issues some parts of rural Alaska are facing due to geography. As someone representing Anchorage, it can be easy to take for granted the free Wi-Fi access at coffee shops, restaurants, bars, and even department stores and banks. But in many rural communities, a public library may be the only place to go with free Wi-Fi, and schools struggle to meet the needs of their students. We expect schools to provide at least 100 kilobits per second for broadband, and we do have a long-term goal of 1,000 kilobits per second. But currently, the Unalaska City School District is dealing with just 13 kilobits per second. I think that's half of what dial-up used to be. I was shocked to learn that tidbit during the AASB fly-in this week. I know Unalaska is not the only place in the state struggling to get adequate broadband, and I think it will be helpful for this committee to hear about what's currently available in the state, where we hope to be in the next few years, and what realistically we can expect from broadband providers. Today we'll be hearing from some service providers who can help us understand what we're dealing with in Alaska. First up, we have Leonard Steinberg and Colin Underwood from ACS. They are on the phone from Anchorage today. Are you with us?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Underwood, and because we started a little bit late, see if you can get it done in about 10 minutes, and allowing five minutes for Q&A from the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Put yourself on the record, sir.
This is Leonard Steinberg, and I'm going to lead off, and Colin Underwood will pick up in just a few minutes here. Madam Chair, members of the House Education Committee, thank you for your service to our state and for the opportunity to address this committee. As I mentioned, my name is Leonard Steinberg. I serve as Senior Vice President, Legal, Regulatory, and Government Affairs at Alaska Communications. With me is my colleague, Colin Underwood, who is Program Manager for Education and Healthcare. I have lived in Alaska for most of the last 40 years, and I have two sons who are in the Anchorage Public Schools. I personally care about the future of our state and our youth, as do my 650 colleagues at Alaska Communications, scattered across Anchorage, Fairbanks, Kenai, Juneau, and many other communities. Alaska Communications is an advocate for an effective and future-oriented public education system in our state, and we, in conjunction with the Boys and Girls Club, have annually recognized youth of distinction with a program called Summer of Heroes. I will share a brief overview of our company and our broadband investments. Colin will then share specific education projects which we've been involved in and his expertise in federal funding for broadband services for schools. The need for high-speed broadband to connect Alaska schools has never been greater. The 2014 Statewide Broadband Task Force report states, and I quote, "We no longer need to debate the benefits and role that broadband plays in the economy. The use of broadband services is prevalent in nearly all that we do, from trade, commerce, education, healthcare, to finance, government services, knowledge transfer, social networking, or simply entertainment. Technology, the internet, and connectedness are part of our daily lives," end quote. Alaska Communications strongly agrees with this statement, and we have been working with our industry colleagues, the state and federal government, to improve broadband infrastructure in Alaska. Alaska Communications has a 120-plus year history connecting our state and has transformed over that time from a phone company to a broadband and IT managed service company. Our purpose is to be a partner for Alaska organizations, listen to their needs, and work together to find solutions. We believe we must earn the trust every day of our customers. That includes customers at home wanting to FaceTime with a family member, to larger customers like the Keenan Peninsula Borough School District wanting to connect their students to the rest of the world. At the same time, we are one of three publicly traded companies based in Alaska. As such, we must balance our responsibilities to our customers, employees, and communities, and our shareholders. We look for every opportunity to invest in broadband, but it has to be economic and make good business sense. In just the past 4 years, we have invested $140 million of capital in our state, and these investments range from building out fiber infrastructure to updating applications and systems critical to serving our customers. For example, in 2014, we partnered with TUGESMUTE, a tribal native organization, to bring 2,200 residents in the Prince William Sound region better access to health care through broadband-enabled telehealth. In 2015, we partnered with Quintillion to acquire an underutilized fiber optic system on the North Slope, expanding high-speed broadband to better serve Alaska's oil and gas industry. Just last year, we became Alaska's first Microsoft partner to offer a private connection to cloud services, and we also became the only Microsoft-certified gold education partner in the state. We have served the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District for more than 10 years, building out broadband infrastructure to schools, including those in remote communities, bringing 21st century technology to Alaska's largest geographic school district. And in Anchorage, we've connected every school with fiber to provide the best possible connections to the Internet. Our core network, which you can see on the map, which I believe has been provided to you, extends across the state from the North Slope to the Lower 48. It includes two diverse undersea fiber optic cables connecting Alaska with the rest of the world, secure access to private and public cloud servers for new cloud capabilities, two diverse fiber optic cables connecting Anchorage and Fairbanks, a fiber optic network on the North Slope, two fiber routes on the Kenai Peninsula and the Kodiak, two fiber routes into Juneau, and microwave links throughout parts of Southeast and Kodiak Island. In addition, we offer end-to-end IT solutions such as security and network monitoring and partner with industry leaders like Microsoft, Aruba, WatchGuard, Barracuda, Nimble, and more. In addition, we are very excited to become Quintillion's first reseller of its fiber optic network. Quintillion is on track to bring high-speed fiber to five communities this year that today have relied solely on satellites for communications outside their towns and villages. In essence, Quintillion will be a wholesale provider, and we are looking forward to facilitating access to their fiber in schools, health clinics, and businesses in those communities. Unfortunately, there are many remote communities in Alaska that still do not have adequate high-capacity connections to the rest of the world. In our industry, we describe the facilities that connect communities with the rest of the world as middle mile, and much work needs to be done to provide these communities with facilities such that broadband is available to all Alaskans. I will now invite Colin to talk about federal funding for schools through the E-Rate program and how that has and can continue to benefit Alaska schools.
Thank you, Leonard. Madam Chair, members of the Health Education Committee, my name is Colin Underwood, and I serve as the Education Program Manager at Alaska Communications. I am the proud father of a bright 4-year-old son. My wife and I are looking forward to watching our son grow in the Alaska public school system. The E-Rate program began in 1996, along with the other universal services, with the first funding issued in 1998. E-Rate funding was percentage-based on the poverty of a school, ranging from 20 to 90% funding support. E-Rate has grown from a $1.25 billion program to over $3 billion in the past 18 years. As of June 30, 2016, Alaska has received over $500 million in E-Rate support since 1998. And during the 2015 fund year, July 1 to June 30, Alaska received just over $100 million in E-Rate support. The E-Rate program provides financial support for much-needed broadband connectivity to schools and libraries. But sometimes, being percentage-based funding, school districts are not able to afford the broadband speeds they need. Accessibility and affordability are equally important. As my colleague Leonard mentioned, we have served the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District for over 10 years. In 2013, we built terrestrial microwave services to Manuel's and Port Graham to bring high-speed broadband to the schools in those communities, enabling the students to participate in video conferencing, real-time distance education, and allowing them to collaborate with other students in the district across the state. The Kenai Peninsula Borough School District was able to purchase this new broadband infrastructure thanks to the support of the E-Rate program. But like all school districts across the state, the district is paying a higher monthly rate than similar services in an urban setting due to the sparse population and remoteness of these communities. However, with changes to the E-Rate program last year, the program will now support upfront, one-time payments of broadband infrastructure construction, with the expectation that E-Rate recipients will see at least a 50% drop in their monthly service or urban-like pricing. Additionally, the E-Rate program will also allow for matching funds up to an additional 10% in support if a state or tribal entity contribute funds to the construction. This opportunity should be seen as a method to provide greater and new broadband capacity to our communities lacking such access today. While we are proud of our investments and partnerships to expand broadband in Alaska, we recognize there are still many remote communities across our state that will be left unserved, and this is our challenge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Underwood and Mr. Steinberg. Any questions for these two gentlemen from the committee at this time? Representative Johnson.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. So you are currently providing the Kenai Peninsula School District their broadband. Is that correct?
That is correct.
I had an interesting conversation with members of the community from Seward, and I note that there are fiber optics that go up through Seward, and they said that they were unable to get high-speed internet connection. Could you address that? I think they're pretty close to the fiber optic, but the cost of connection is in the millions.
The school or the community is unable to get high
school
speed access?
I think it was the school in Seward. A school board member there said that their school was unable to connect to the fiber optic because of the high cost of connection.
I'll be frankly honest, I'm unaware of that situation. We are providing them high-speed internet today, and just recently the school district went out to rebid, and we won many of their services again. And I know Seward was on that with fiber access. We provide the speed that the school district asks for, and we provide those speeds.
And I'm happy to hear that.
And answer that question for them and yourself if you wish.
I would like a follow-up because, you know, it's always great to get the rest of the story, so I would be interested.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Fensler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, I guess first I will concur with one of your statements that much work must be done yet. I would classify it as not just much work, I would say a vast majority still needs to be done in some areas. My question specifically refers to your quintillion reselling. Which five communities will you be reselling in?
The quintillion facilities have landings at Dead Horse, Barrow, Wainwright, Point Hope, Kotzebue, and Nome. So it's really in the northwest Alaska at this point. There's been some discussion about whether those facilities may get extended further south at some point in the future. But what we know at this point, and of course Quintillion is a separate company, we can't speak for them, is it's those northwest communities that will be receiving fiber connections.
And follow up, if I may.
Go go ahead, Representative.
And through the chair, I guess my specific question was, you mentioned five of those communities. You're listing a couple more that are being connected. I'm wondering which five you're buying into and that you'll be providing services for as ACS is purchasing on the Quintillion project.
Well, there's, Madam Chair, Nome, Kotzebue, Point Hope, Wainwright, and Barrow.
So not Dead Horse or anywhere there?
Dead Horse, we will also be providing service. There's a separate Quintillion fiber that runs up along the Dalton Highway, and that will be commencing service in, I believe, next month. And the subsea capacity will, and that Dalton Highway will provide capacity to the Dead Horse area. The subsea capacity is what we were referring to. That is scheduled to become available later this year, and that will reach the five communities that we just spoke about.
Representative Fansler? Further?
Follow up. I noticed on your map, you do have several communities in kind of western Alaska. Local voice, and what's a data switch? Just is that like 3G, or is it providing internet in like Caltech, Nuwato, Koyukuk, Kosila, Hughes, places like that?
Chair, this is Colin Underwood. Could you maybe restate the question? I'm curious, are you looking to know what services we're going to be able to provide on that Dalton Highway link, or if you could provide a little more information, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'm just through the chair, I'm just wondering, on your map here, looking at your network map, it says you've got local voice and data switch sites at Caltech, Nuwato, Koyukuk, Kosila, and Hughes, and I was just wondering, tell me what a data switch site is. Is that local voice, I'm presuming, is not cell phone, but it would be, like, hardwired? Is that what it is, or...?
Yes, this is Leonard Steinberg, through the chair, responding to your question. In those remote communities today, we provide what's called, in our business, a local exchange service. We own and operate the facilities that are in the community, but we do not own or operate facilities that connect the community with the rest of the world. So typically, in most of those communities today, I apologize, but it's a product of a somewhat arcane regulatory structure. There's a separate set of services that are provided that are referred to as inter-exchange services. And the inter-exchange carriers are typically either AT&T, Alaskan, GCI connect those communities with the rest of the world. Most of those communities that you see are connected via satellite. There are some that have some alternative connections, either microwave or, in a few rare cases, fiber. But typically those facilities are owned and controlled by a different company than Alaska Communications.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, we're entering a interesting time in American politics nationwide. I wonder, in the event that the federal E-rate program should be significantly scaled back or discontinued, what effects would we see from our seats here? How would your rates change?
This is Colin Underwood. Clarify your question: how would Alaska's rates, telecommunications rates, change if the E-rate program were unavailable?
Yes, and I suppose, how do you assess the likelihood of some catastrophic change in the federal environment?
Okay. Catastrophic change, look to my colleague Leonard here, unlikely catastrophic change. There are certainly being talks about restructuring the infrastructure program I mentioned, where they're providing the upfront support for broadband. That may likely, we may see that go away, that opportunity, in a year or two. As far as costs go, many of these school districts are getting an 80 to 90% discount on their services. So you can see their costs that they're paying today, many of them, $5,000 a month out of their own pocket, increase 80 to 90%. Does that help answer your question?
More than that. Through the chair, if the E-rate program were to go away, you would see that many of these school districts that serve remote communities would be unable to afford broadband. It just becomes completely unaffordable today. So if a school district pays 10% today, which many of them do, just by way of example, if a service costs $100,000 a month, that means that for the school district, they're only paying $10,000 a month. And to be able to go from $10,000 to $100,000 a month would just simply be impossible for many of these rural school districts.
Go ahead, Mr. Parrish, but we have several more speakers and we are going to run out of time.
I can send an email. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, ACS, for what you're doing to help a lot of educational hurdles we have in rural Alaska. One of the things that the state is recognizing is the capacity for broadband to really bring together global classrooms. It's making the whole idea of boundaries drawn at districts lines or by individual schools obsolete. And the question I have is, do you see regulatory hurdles that are within state control that are problematic for you developing carrier partnerships with Quintillion or with the other carriers you work with, AT&T, GCI, Alaskom, to build out broadband? Is there something in regulation that is within our control that is inhibiting build out? Or it may just be a market competition issue too, but if you have comments on that, I'd sure appreciate it.
Through the chair, this is Leonard Steinberg. Excellent question. I'm not going to give you as complete an answer as you would like right now because it's a very big topic. I will simply say this. Statutes and regulations, for the most part, that the state has today in the area of telecommunications regulation were put in place largely in the 1970s. There has been huge upheaval in both technology and market structure since that time. And it goes without saying that the regulatory structure that's in place today is archaic and not at all well suited to today's technology nor to today's market structure. And I would encourage the legislature to think about updating all of those laws and rules. And it's a much bigger conversation, so perhaps we can take it up another time.
Thank you, Representative Kopp and Mr. Steinberg. That was, it's eye-opening, I'm telling you. And I know we could spend a lot more time doing this, but thank you very much, gentlemen in Anchorage. I'm going to call up Tina Pigeon with GCI, if you could come up and give us your presentation. And I'd like to say that we might be able to schedule future time, additional time with these folks in the industry, if the committee is so willing. Good morning, Ms. Pigeon. Go ahead and put yourself on the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tina Pidgeon. I'm GCI's general counsel, and I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of you today to discuss broadband capabilities throughout the state. GCI has contributed over the past, our past 40 years, to much of the progress that has been made, and we acknowledge that there is much progress still to be made. And if you could just give me a moment, I'll bring up the map that serves as the background for the beginning of my comments. And this will be a test of my own technology capabilities.
Bum, 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 bum.
There we go.
Okay. All right. In the last decade, GCI has invested almost $1.4 billion in infrastructure throughout the state, and that really reflects our historic commitment to statewide services and how we can use advancements and technological innovations to provide the best services possible throughout the state, looking at technologies community by community. What this map shows is it's a statewide map of infrastructure that is available, and this focuses on the infrastructure that connects communities from a central point within the community to the internet backbone. This is not only GCI's infrastructure, it actually represents as much of the information that we were able to gather from other providers as well about their services and on a technology by technology basis throughout the state. In some locations there are multiple networks available. So for example, in a community you may have fiber connectivity and or microwave connectivity and or satellite connectivity. And what this map represents is both existing and planned networks through 2017. Just working through the key of the information that's available, everything that is represented in fiber is either existing or announced projects, possibly not quite online. The purple is microwave connectivity, and where you see black dots, that represents communities that are connected via satellite only. Each of the technologies has positives and possibly negatives, but we have to be able to utilize all the tools in the toolkit, so to speak, in order to maximize connectivity on a statewide basis. The three largest hurdles in terms of providing statewide connectivity really is a combination of geographic complications, low population, and overall high cost. Pardon me. The map also is overlaid with the boundaries of school districts, so it also will give you an idea of, on a school district by school district basis, what types of services might be available throughout a particular school district. Before I talk about the positives of any of the individual network capabilities, I also want to take a moment to show you a map of where the connectivity stood just 6 years ago, fully acknowledging that there are both cost and infrastructure hurdles to be overcome. I do want to identify for the committee that providers throughout the state with existing resources available, including the E-rate program, have truly been able to make some phenomenal advances in the last 6 years. And to the extent that those available resources and programs remain in place, I would anticipate that there is continued progress that can still be made.
Representative Johnson.
Yes, thank you, Chair, through this. So some of this build-out, or all of this build-out, was by E-rate, or did you receive other federal grants that helped subsidize this, and what do you see the future of those federal grants?
Through the Chair, Representative Johnson, speaking just from GCI's perspective, in terms of the, you see the purple in the YK Delta region, that really for GCI, the initial ability to extend a combination microwave and fiber network, the initial impetus or what got us over the hurdle to be able to do that was out of a federal stimulus program, and the initial award was $88 million. It was half loan and half grant. We ended up actually being under budget on that project, so we did not actually utilize all of the funding. But in fact, that was the initial seed money, if you will, and it's from that jumping off point that we've been able to make additional investments going forward to extend the network for the remainder of a lot of the purple segments that you see there. Indeed, the ability to continue to be able to fund upgrades, operations, maintenance, certainly the ability to continue with in those three areas as well as extending the network, it really is critical to have ongoing funding to the primary or large capacity users of those networks, which are the school districts through the E-rate program, and I'll also note that the rural health care providers through the rural health care program.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
So just a little bit of background about each of the technologies. Fiber in the telecom industry is considered ideal where you can take it. It provides the most capacity and the most upgradable capacity. There are locations where fiber either is not able to be implemented, or it would be difficult to keep fiber operational over long periods of time because of where it is located and the difficulty of reaching it in the future. And what GCI in particular has determined in a number of communities is a combination of microwave and fiber, where depending on the geographic characteristics of the location and where we're able to deploy the service in the most cost-effective way. Microwave can provide similar attributes of service to fiber. However, it is more difficult to upgrade in terms of expanded capacity. It requires, instead of an electronics switch out, it can require a wholesale hardware upgrades, which can be more expensive over time. And then satellite capabilities. Indeed, a lot of the services that we talk about benefiting in the education space can and have been provided over satellite really since the E-rate program began. There are challenges with latency, which is simply a term used to describe, because of the distance from the satellite and the communities that it's serving, it just takes longer time to communicate back and forth, introducing latency, and that can create issues with broadband, not so much the connectivity, but sometimes the applications that run across the broadband link. It is possible to overcome some of those technological difficulties with satellite using caching, IP transport, and some other technologies. Beyond identifying those things, I can't go into much more detail. That's beyond my technological capability. But satellite is serviceable. I will note, too, that there are technology improvements on the horizon, particularly with satellite, that can provide better performance. And so when we talk about the absence of connectivity, there really isn't any community in the state that doesn't have the ability to access broadband. At that point, it really becomes a matter of cost, and with satellite in particular, how much bandwidth you have to throw at the connection to overcome some of the natural limitations of the service technology itself. So from the education perspective, I think it probably it goes without stating and is also somewhat of an understatement to say that broadband is critical to schools and the education mission. But the reverse is also true, that schools and education are important to the ability to extend broadband further into the communities, because without the large capacity usage, it would be very difficult to put this type of investment throughout the state simply to provide service based on residential usage alone. It would just be very difficult to make that investment and to have any sort of return or the ability to continue to service the network after that point. It's my understanding that the committee has heard from school districts and probably has heard many examples of the usage of distance learning. I hope you won't mind if I will just provide a few examples that I've come across that I have found particularly amazing. For example, in the Lower Kuskokwim School District, it has the largest video conferencing network in the state. Across five studios, it is able to provide simultaneous five classroom sessions at a time. In the Kodiak School District, students there participated utilizing broadband services in an international competition, winning by providing literally solutions to real problems posed by NASA, which I think is just incredible. And in the Northwest Arctic Borough School District, there has been a focus on partnering with the Alaska Technical Center, focusing on career pathways in areas such as healthcare, education, process technology, and culinary arts. Schools have also invested in devices that allow them to participate in mandated online testing, dual enrollment for high school and college courses, and in video conferencing that allows not only within district learning, but to utilize resources across districts as well. And as I mentioned, it is possible to provide all of these services across any technology. At that point, the question really comes back to cost. Technology can also be used to facilitate cost savings. The focus of this map and the comments that you've heard thus far in the committee hearing have really been about these between community connections. Schools also have to have internal connections, and what's usually called inside wiring traditionally has been done using actual physical lines within the walls, and that becomes very expensive in terms of maintenance and upgrade. And so it's also possible through technology now to utilize more cost-effective Wi-Fi services to allow connectivity within the buildings. So each of these technological innovations provides new opportunities in the future, and we are consistently looking for how to incorporate those innovations within to the service packages to partner with schools to provide better service and hopefully in a more economic way. I will note that over time, costs for these services do go down, but as the costs go down, the appetite and the use for the broadband capacity itself grows. So often, as the cost curve goes down, the purchases go up, and so the overall spend sometimes stays the same or increases depending on the resources that a particular school has.
Ms. Pidgeon, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up as we'd like to get our last presentation in, and I'm going to limit questions through my office instead of in person. Go ahead.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. I'll simply note quickly and wrap up that in the future, there's also the capability of accessing applications and resources in the clouds, mm-hmm. which may also provide opportunities for cost savings in terms of hardware investments that are typically occurring on the ground today. With that, I'll wrap up my testimony, Madam Chair, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pidgeon. We're going to take a brief at ease to get the technology up.
I am Executive Director of Alaska Telephone Association. My members include all of the wireline and wireless providers in Alaska, and these days that means broadband. I'll just take a few minutes. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you this morning, and I just want to touch on another piece of the funding that is foundational to broadband service, particularly in rural Alaska. We've heard about E-rate, and the piece I will be talking about is the High Cost Fund, and colloquially known these days as the Alaska Plan. The Alaska Plan funds broadband. It is targeted to rural areas to operate, upgrade, and expand broadband availability in rural Alaska. It supports improved both fixed and wireless services, as well as traditional voice service. It increases broadband access, but just as essentially, it sustains existing broadband networks. The Universal Service Fund has four components. We've heard about E-rate, touched on rural health care. The High Cost Fund has been foundational to networks in Alaska. Similar to the old Rural Electrification Program, which sought to extend electric networks through rural areas where there might not be a business case, Universal Service Funding in the telecom arena has done a similar thing for rural areas. It's been critical to Alaska. Without it, our networks would be a shadow of what they are today. As we know, in many of our towns and villages, there simply is no economic case to bring broadband. But with USF funding, companies have been able to build and operate broadband networks, and we'll be expanding and upgrading them over the 10 years of the Alaska Plan. The Alaska Plan is a solution to a critical problem that arose beginning in 2011. The Federal Communications Commission was working to reform these funding streams. Unfortunately, their reforms were a poor fit for Alaska. In the first 4 years of reform, my landline companies experienced an average 21% decrease in just 4 years. This had the effect of delaying and actually threatening broadband service in rural areas. So in 2014, Chairman Wheeler and Commissioner O'Reilly with the FCC came to Alaska, toured around, talked to all of my members, and challenged industry for a solution. I give them a lot of credit. They recognized the track we were on was very damaging to Alaska. They weren't quite sure what to do about it, so they asked us for a solution. ATA members formed a working group, and we created the Alaska Plan. We worked together to advocate for it with the FCC, our congressional delegation, and it was adopted in August of last fall. What it does is freezes $150 million in existing annual funds for broadband service in Alaska, and more importantly, or just as important, it retargets the resulting improvements to rural areas where they're needed the most. It's very important to note that this is the same pot of money which had been dedicated to Alaska all along, although reduced to 2011 levels, and is essential to operating our broadband and voice networks. It has now been stabilized, retargeted to move it from urban areas to the more rural areas. It is essential to operating and maintenance of existing networks. For example, some rural providers rely on the high cost support, which we're now calling Alaska Plan, for as much as 45% of their operating revenues. Without it, networks would go dark. So predictability is essential when you're talking about 30-year life of our infrastructure, and the Alaska Plan restores that predictability for at least 10 years. Tied to this funding are very concrete and enforceable obligations. Every carrier participating in the Alaska Plan has committed to specific measurable obligations. The FCC conducted a rigorous review of each company's proposed obligations before approving them. The obligations are tailored to each company's resources and capabilities. It was very important that each company be pressed to do the most they could with this funding, and yet the bar could not be set too high to where they couldn't achieve the performance obligations, because that would risk a total loss of support. And as I've touched on, that would be catastrophic to some of our companies. Tied to the funding and the obligations is accountability. The Alaska plan introduces a new level of accountability to USF and Alaska with new monitoring, reporting, and potential penalties. The FCC is particularly focused on mapping availability of broadband, as well as monitoring the availability of middle mile as it develops. Each company will report their progress annually, including geocoding locations at the census block level to show where broadband is available and at what speeds. They will have to certify to their benchmarks, and if at the end of 10 years the targets are not met, the companies will pay back 1.8 times the support. So they're real teeth in this accountability. Just in summary, the Alaska Plan is an essential funding mechanism which will both operate and deploy broadband service to Alaskans in rural areas over the next 10 years. It brings the stability essential to investing in broadband infrastructure and operating our existing networks. My members are committed to their obligations under the plan, and work is actually already underway to improve broadband in their communities. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. I am available for questions by email as well.
Okay, thank you. Let's take a couple of moments for questions if there are any burning issues, seeing as you wrapped up beautifully in 5 minutes. Thank you, Ms. Flowers.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Go ahead, Mr. Representative Kopp, sorry. And I.
Thank you, Christine. Did you say 45% of the operating budget for carriers in rural Alaska was funded by, I forget what, where that money came from?
Through the chair, yes, Representative Kopp. There's a range. It's my rural companies, a range of up to 45% of operating revenues. And I had queried my members before I came, and I got answers anywhere from 25 to 40 to up to 45%. Mm-hmm. And this funding comes from the Alaska Plan, which is universal service funding.
Okay, and one more, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
You mentioned middle mile monitoring a couple of times. What is that?
The FCC is concerned, as we all are, with the lack of middle mile in some areas of Alaska. So they, and middle mile being the connectivity from, say, your local network in Dillingham, which is where I'm originally from, out to the world. So that chunk, the FCC is requiring reporting if there's new middle mile deployed. If a company actually is finding they can't afford middle mile, the FCC is requiring them to report every other year on that availability.
Thank you.
Okay, any more questions? Go ahead, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is the, you mentioned a 30-year life of infrastructure. What is the life of a piece of cable?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, it can vary. I know the copper cable can go over 30 years. I use the ballpark of 30 years, but to get specific, I need to go to my technology people.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
I'm not trying to ask you to look at your crystal ball, but there's a new FCC chairman, and do you see a change as far as the universal? Should I just have a senior moment? Funding?
Through the chair, Representative Johnston. The chair is committed to broadband service in rural areas, as is Commissioner O'Reilly. Their focus has been getting as much broadband out to rural areas as quickly as possible. We had to commit to prioritizing getting to the have-nots first before doing upgrades. I don't see that philosophy changing. All of the changes that were made to implement the Alaska Plan, that docket was completed. So, no, I think we have good predictability over the 10 years of the plan.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, committee members. Thank you, Ms. O'Connor. And any questions for Ms. Pigeon while she's still here? Okay. Okay, Representative Fansler, go ahead. Thank you. Sorry, I misunderestimated the length of the presentations. Go ahead, Representative
Fansler. Thank you. I guess I have more of a comment, because my questions, we could be here for well past the start of the floor session, and the questions for everyone. So my request, more my question is, can you all come back? We need more time, I think, you know, to discuss this and to kind of go through it, and I appreciate everyone coming and giving these presentations. This helps us, and this helps us understand. Certainly appreciate talking about, you know, the regulations that were brought up, you know, and I think we need to do this in a, again, many, perhaps multiple times again.
Thank you, Representative Fansler. Totally agree, and I think we will make time. Representative Johnston.
This is another looking into the future question, but I think it's moving so quickly, and when you do come back with your technicians, and Ms. Pidgeon, you kind of struck on this, is what's happening with satellite. And, you know, we don't have the traffic in the northern hemisphere that's in the southern hemisphere. But that being said, we also know what both Google and Facebook are doing in the southern hemisphere as far as technology. And I would be interested in your next presentation, sort of where you see that going, because not that I want to discount fiber optics or microwave, but I think we need to be aware that this is changing very quickly, and even though there was this huge commission looking at this just, 2 years ago, it's probably outdated.
Through the chair, Representative Johnston, there are a number of projects that are announced and under consideration today, satellite projects called low Earth orbit satellites, and the opportunity that holds for locations like Alaska, where in the past you have just put up one satellite and maybe it would cover part of the state, maybe it wouldn't. What we're looking at in the future are networks of satellites, literally hundreds, sometimes thousands, circling the globe. And I think the opportunity for benefit there is twofold. One is you have providers of these networks who are not just looking at the demand for service in Alaska, but looking at it globally, which means you have a much different set of cost characteristics and the ability to benefit locally, but not simply on the merits of our own within Alaska demand. And second, the low Earth orbit satellites, because they're networked, they're much closer to the Earth, and so therefore help overcome the latency. And also they operate more efficiently in terms of how the information travels across the network itself. Instead of having to go up and down and up and down to get different places, there's actually capability now for the communications to traverse between the system of networks to get from point A to point B. So actually, depending on the distance between locations, it can be more efficient than fiber connectivity, depending on the circumstances. So I'd be happy to come back with some more detailed information.
I think that would be very helpful for the committee.
All right, seeing no more questions, thank you so much for your presentations today, and let's talk about the future. I'd like to remind everyone there is no scheduled House Education meeting this Friday. Our next meeting, Monday, February 20th, 9 a.m., immediately following the House Finance Subcommittee meeting, and we will be hearing from the University of Alaska that day. And with that, we're adjourned today at 10:07 a.m.